Welcome to Alligator Preserves, everyone. I am your host, Laurel McCarg. And today I have with us a friend of mine who goes way, way back. She has the most amazing name. Her name is Cheryl I Love. And we're going to talk about how she became a reluctant ninja.
Welcome to Alligator Preserves, a weekly podcast about revealing yourself through storytelling, story reading, and story writing, but probably not story arithmetic, because that's not a thing. You just might surprise yourself with the secrets you'll uncover.
Cheryl, I Love, welcome to Alligator Preserves.
Hi, Laurel. Thank you so much for having me. It is an honor. I always love talking to you. It's always an adventure.
Well, I love talking to you too. And I've got to ask you, how has it been? I don't know how many years since we met. How has it taken this long for me to have you on my show?
I don't know. I know we've talked about it in the past, but like you said, it's been several years. And I think something happened along the time that we would talk about it because a nasty thing called the pandemic kind of got in the way and everybody kind of lost touch and lost, you know, focus and direction. And then thank goodness we found our way again.
Yes. And life and et cetera, et cetera. We first met at Jerry Fabianic's Book Nook at the Georgetown Christmas Market many years ago. I had a table there with my books. You had a table there with your books. And we were near one another. And I would look at you and think, oh my gosh, that little woman, a woman over there is a ninja. And, you know, our talks were really fun. And I got to tell you, you need to be proud of me because I don't know if you remember this, but one of those years, you had a challenge for the people around us for who could sit cross-legged and stand from the cross-legged position without using their hands. And I'm pretty sure I did it. I was in my elf shoes and my elf outfit. And I'm pretty sure I was able to do it. Difficult in heels. But I tried it this morning because I thought, oh, I wonder if I can still do that. I can still do that. And it's way easier without shoes on. So
yeah, those heels kind of do get in the way. Yes, I was so proud of everybody that day because I was surprised how many people took me up on the challenge because I figured who wants to get down on the floor, number one. And it was just a wooden floor in this beautiful building. We were at the Heritage Center in Georgetown, which is, for the listeners so they know, it is the original one room or one single building schoolhouse that was built in the early or mid, I'm guessing mid 1800s. And it just was grade one all the way up through grade 12. And it's just being in that building, there's something so magical about it. They have the original chalkboards.
Yeah.
And, you know, the original floor. And of course, everything's been renovated and restored, but it was just such a beautiful experience. It was also very cold.
Yes. Beautiful building, beautiful experience, and we'll do it again this year, Georgetown Christmas Market, first two weekends in December. I'll put out the pitch now, even though we're just getting into summer. Well, Cheryl I Love, you've had a lot of people interview you in the past, like a lot, and I haven't listened to all of them, but I want to maybe try to get into some different questions here and have a little bit of fun with that. But first of all, you began this journey of fitness and becoming a ninja, which we'll get into, because at a pretty early age, you were a chronic pain patient. Can you tell us why, what caused the chronic pain?
Well, nobody really knows exactly what caused it. You know, hindsight is 20/20. And now since I went through, you know, physical therapy school and stuff, I have a very good idea of what happened. But at the time, you know, nobody could give me any answers. All they could tell me was that I was a chronic pain patient. I would always be a chronic pain patient. I would never have, I would never live without pain. I would never have the life that I wanted or had before. And I would never be able to do my grocery shopping and my laundry all in the same day because the arthritis in my spine was so severe, I would end up being bedridden. And I was 36 years old. So when that one physician told me that, because I had a team, I mean, I was such a mess. I needed a team. I had my doctors, I had my physical therapists, I had all the my pharmacists, the medication, you know, my massage therapists. So all the fun stuff that I used to do when I was a young, healthy woman was taken away from me. And then that one doctor actually gave me that prognosis. And, you know, what a horrible thing to do to somebody, to take away their hope, to just shatter their spirit and destroy their dreams. I was planning on going back to school and getting a master's degree in physical therapy. And she said at the same visit, you better forget about physical therapy school, because Eve, you are too broken. Even if you could do the work, which you can't because of your injury, you're just too old to go back to school.
Too old. Oh my goodness. I hope that person is no longer in practice. Holy mackerel.
Can you believe it?
Yeah. Well, I can. I can, because there have been people in my life who have told me I couldn't do things. And so, I mean, that leads me to an interesting question. Do you think you were born with a no-quit psyche? Like, because a lot of people quit, right? A lot of people listen to their doctors, take the drugs, do the rehab, and accept that diagnosis. You didn't. Mm-hmm. I haven't in the past listened to people who said you can't.
Well, I know you well enough. Yeah, so I'm sure you did not.
But do you think you're born with it? I mean, what triggers something like that?
Oh, you know, I think I must have been born with it. I know I have always been incomparably stubborn my entire life, which drove my parents crazy. But hello, the nut doesn't fall far from the tree, you know, and I have four sisters. All five of us are incredibly stubborn. But I do believe that I have won the prize, because I take it to the level of a fine art form. But I think that's what's gotten me through a lot of difficult times in my life. And, you know, we all have our ups and our downs. But it seems like maybe even, dare I say it, that I've always had the spirit of a warrior deep inside of me that I didn't even realize it. But I've always been, at some level, kind of a fighter. Eastern European background. My father was an immigrant from Czechoslovakia. He and my grandmother got out on the last ship out of Calais before they closed the port on December 29th, 1939.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think I come from a line of resilience, strength, and there's a lot more backstory to this, which will be another book coming up eventually.
Yay!
Eventually.
Yay!
But, you know, my dad, when he came over, you know, he was 12 years old, didn't speak a word of English. He was very tall for his age, and they put him in with the first graders because, of course, he couldn't speak English. And so everybody made fun of him, fun of his clothes. And, you know, he couldn't speak English. And he actually went to night school. Started real early so he could learn the language. And he was 12 years old when he came to the United States. And 5 years later, he joined the United States Navy to fight for his country.
Oh my goodness. So, all right. It's in your blood.
Thank you. It's my DNA.
It's your DNA. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're one of five?
I'm one of five. I'm number three out of five. My mother had three little girls in 4 years. So we were just boom, boom, boom. And then 5 years later, she had another one. And 9 years later, surprise, we got a baby sister.
I'm one of five daughters as well. I'm number four. There was a boom, 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 and then a little bit of a change. Did you ever feel like the black sheep of your family? Like, were you very different from your other siblings?
Oh, yes. And as a matter of fact, I was told by my sisters many times that I must have been adopted. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Look at this face. Look at, you know, Bubba's face, my grandmother, who I look exactly, you know, spitting image of. It's like, I'm not the adopted one. I'm kind of thinking maybe the rest of you are.
I love it. I always kind of felt that way. And I think it's okay.
So you have no brothers either?
No.
Wow.
Five girls.
Five of you. Wow.
Five girls. And you know, my mom.
Energy. Yeah.
Very interesting energy. And people always ask, you know, how did your dad deal with, you know, six women in the household? And I said, he drank.
Mine did too, but he didn't start until we were a little bit older. You know, I think it was the puberty years that he started. And, you know, he also, there were a lot of times he wasn't around. You know, that's when he started skiing at, you know, when he was about 40. He started taking karate lessons when he was about 40 because he had so many girls and, you know, something to get him out of the house. And so to this day, my sisters and I are still shocked that he lived as long as he did.
Wow. How long did he live? How old was he?
He was almost 84. He was a few months shy of his 84th birthday. And my mother, he and my mother passed away in November of 2010. They died 19 days apart from the same disease.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, wow. My dad almost made it to 90. My mom almost made it to 89. Well, four years apart. And you know, when we look at, and again, talking about health and talking about fitness and talking about doctors and what they tell you, sometimes you just have to shake your head, right? Because, you know, I look at my parents' lives and, you know, they were drinkers. My dad smoked for 40 years before giving it up when we were little. They weren't that active. Dad bowled. Mom was always flitting about. She was a catch and release shopper. I mean, you know, she kept the five of us going. But, you know, when it comes to guidance that they would be given, they didn't follow it and they lived long, healthy lives. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that says.
You know, both of my parents, I think, lived pretty healthy lives. My dad especially was pretty athletic. And, you know, he started skiing at a later age. You can't see the picture of him on skis. It's behind me. But anyway, you know, and like I said, karate and everything. So he was very active and very physical. He was also a laborer is what they called them. So he built the house that I grew up in. And it was actually the second stone house that he built. You know, with a walkout basement, he laid all of the stone. It was absolutely beautiful. You know, but he did the work himself. My mother was one of those people who is allergic to exercise or was allergic to exercise. But she says running up and down the stairs all day long, you know, doing laundry and stuff, it was exercise enough for her.
Yeah.
They were always very active in their community, in our community. And of course, having five kids, all girls, they were always on the lookout, you know, to make sure that we were safe. And so they were very, very involved in pretty much everything that we did.
All right. So you started doing martial arts at the age of 47.
Yes.
After being, I would say, nagged by your acupuncturist, yes?
I'd take it further than nagging. I was more harangued. I mean, he was just relentless in trying to get me on the mat with him to train.
Why? What was in it for him?
Well, that's what I wanted to know. Because the very first time he brought it up, it was the first time I had met him. I was 44 years old. I was looking for a new acupuncturist. And one of my clients said, hey, why don't you try mine? He's really great. I love him. He's very good. And I knew she was a picky person, so she wouldn't send me to a hack or just anybody. So I thought, okay. So I went to this guy for the first time. And the very first time, you know, he introduced himself. We had a nice conversation. He seemed like a normal person. And then the minute he started putting needles in my legs, he got a very faraway look on his face. And he said, you know, with your legs and my coaching, I could teach you how to kill with these things. And all I could think of was, okay, who thinks like that, let alone says it out loud to a perfect stranger?
Yes. And so, were you feeling either like, oh, this is exciting, or I want to run away from this guy?
Door number two. And I thought, okay, the guy is a lunatic. Where's my purse? I'm going to grab my purse and run. But then I realized, mental head smacking moment, I had needles sticking out all over me. So I was literally pinned to the table. So unless I wanted to try and run with, you know, half my clothes on and needles sticking out all over me, I was kind of stuck, more or less. So I just thanked him for the offer and said, no, I think I'll just save my killer legs for ballet class. Martial arts is never going to happen.
And it took what, 3 years before you said, fine?
Yes, it took 3 years. And he wore me down. And finally, I said, fine. I will take a few classes just to prove to you how much I'm going to hate it, and then I'll quit. Well, 10 years later, I became his first female black belt. In 20 years of teaching, he never had a woman. I'm getting chills just thinking about it now. He never had a woman achieve that high of a rank. And the funny thing is, Lauren, I didn't want a black belt. I never went in there. I just wanted to learn how to live to see another day. Yeah. I didn't want to climb up the ranks. I didn't want a black belt. I didn't want a yellow belt. I didn't even want the white belt, but it came with the uniform, so I had to take it. So, but that was never my intention, was to climb up in the ranks. But obviously I did not hate it.
And you wanted to feel more confident in your ability to take care of yourself, yes?
Yes, absolutely. That was definitely a part of it. But even for the first 2 years when I was training, I would have to talk myself into getting out of the car to walk to the dojo door, because for the first 2 years, I was terrified. And I don't know why, because the guys were so nice to me. There were very few women in class. Most of the time, I was the only woman. Mm-hmm. But the guys were very nice. But I just, you know, would kind of rock back and forth doing my little mantra, you can do this, you can do this, you can do this. And then I would go in. I'd have a great time. I'd have a good class, you know, and it was fine. But there was always something in the back of my head that said, you can get hurt.
Yeah.
You know, I had to tell that part of myself to shut up and mind its own business and go away, because I never really did get injured. I mean, there were a few times I had like two minor physical injuries and, you know, definitely emotional, psychological injuries as well along the way, but it came with the territory and I worked through it. And here I am 20 years later, still training 3 times a week.
So your book is called The Reluctant Ninja, How a Middle-Aged Princess Became a Warrior Queen. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Thank you.
I read it and I wasn't sure how I would take it. As a former Army officer, mm-hmm. I'm very interested in fitness and leadership and lots of different things. You expose a lot in here, a lot. Mm-hmm. And after your book release, I remember you saying you were very, very anxious after your book release. What made you so anxious? Other than the fact that as authors, when we put things out there, we know that we're giving it to the public and we have mm-hmm. no more control over it and how people will react. What specifically made you anxious about this?
Specifically, it was, holy crap, the story is out there. I cannot get the genie back in the bottle. And then I had to convince myself that nobody who knew me would ever buy the book or read it. And so I spent like 3 weeks, you know, under the covers going, what am I going to do? What am I going to do? And then I convinced myself nobody would read it. Only perfect strangers would read it. And so that was fine. I was fine with that. So I convinced myself of that. Crawled out from under the covers, went to the dojo the next day, and sitting on Sensei's desk was a copy of the book that you're holding in your hands.
You didn't think people who knew you would buy it?
No.
Why? Aren't those the people we hope will be the first ones to buy our books?
Well, yes, except this one has a lot, as you know, a lot of detail, a lot of personal stories in it, a lot of things that I never told anybody. Mm. And it wasn't until, like, you know, I had been training for, well, after I got my black belt. So I was 57. So it wasn't until I was 57 and I got invited to speak to this women's group, you know, the Polka Dot Society, something like that. They had a speaker who backed out at the very last minute, and the woman knew me. She says, hey, would you come and, you know, be the speaker? And I'm like, sure, you never say no. So I said, sure. And she says, well, what do you speak about? And I says, well, fitness over 50. And I also have, you know, the story about, I called it the invisible black belt back then, one of my signature talks. And she says, tell me about that. So I did. And she says, that's the one I want you to talk about.
Yeah.
I said, oh, great. Thank you. You know, and I'll see you then. And I hung up the phone and was like, oh my God, I have 10 days to put a speech together, because I was just flying by the seat of my pants. I had nothing. So I called one of my closest friends, Polly Latofsky. I don't know if you know her. I'm sure you've heard of her. She has the publishing consulting company called My Word Publishing. And she's an author herself. So I called her right away and I'm like, Polly, what am I going to do? I said yes to this and I don't have anything. She goes, what are you doing right now? I says, I'm panicking. And she said, come over to my house. And I said, okay. So I ran over to her house. She lives about 10 minutes away. And we sat down for 3 hours and hashed out some of the details. And so I had 10 days, like I said, to prepare, to learn the speech, to practice it. And when I went there and I gave that talk in front of 30 women, it was the very first time in 19 years that I had ever shared the entire story with anybody. You learn how to suppress things just to keep yourself protected.
What was the reception like?
Oh, well, this you could imagine. A room full of, you know, 30 women, and, you know, a lot of them were in tears and a lot of them were cheering. And then toward the end, I actually did like a little demonstration and I pull somebody up from the audience to say, okay, I'm going to teach you something, you know, one of the little ninja secrets, how to avoid an attack. And, you know, of course, everybody's like, oh, this is so scary. And of course, it wasn't. And of course, the participant did fabulously. And then I awarded her with a white belt.
What move did you teach her?
It's a secret. So I'm going to tell you, but don't tell anybody.
I won't. And okay, those people out there listening, don't tell anyone either.
Okay. Actually, I'm going to give you permission to tell every single person you know, especially women. Okay.
All right.
So how to avoid an attack. Evade. The whole secret is evade, deflect, and redirect. You think about it. If you're not in the way or the path of an attack, you can't get hurt. So let's just imagine I'm minding my own business and some idiot thinks that they're going to punch me in the face. They see me and they go to punch. And all I do is I shift, I turn to the side, and that attacker goes flying past me into a brick wall, off a cliff, whatever, you know, off a mountaintop, whatever is in the way. So all of that negative energy just flew past me and back into the attacker, and they are the ones that get hurt. And the same principle applies to, as we all know, hits and attacks come in all different ways, you know.
And you have to anticipate them in order to evade.
You have to have that awareness. Yeah. So you have to be able to look at people and be able to evaluate constantly, you know, what's going on in their heads. If you're in a safe situation, if you're not, it sounds exhausting. It sounds overwhelming, but it's not. It can be a lot of fun. You can turn it into a game, have like a ladies ninja night and practice some of these things. It's actually really fun and so empowering. So that's basically the first thing, is just get out of the way. Even if it's like a, you know, verbal confrontation or a verbal attack. Okay. You have four sisters. I have four sisters. We know how things go sometimes, right? And when, you know, they know how to press your buttons, and when you're having like a conversation that starts to escalate into an argument, all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute, I'm not going here. So I'm just going to deflect and redirect. So instead of dancing the dance or dancing to the music, instead of giving them the response that they're anticipating, mm-hmm. you completely turn it around. It's like you're not even there, and all of their angst, because you're not giving them the result that they want or the plan. You know, every attacker has a planned response from their victim. And all of a sudden, you just kind of unplug them. Their brain's going, wait a minute, this isn't what I meant, what I wanted to happen. So what do I do now? And it's beautiful to watch. It's really fun.
So it's either a, so how about those red socks? Or it's no response at all to
yes.
a verbal threat.
Yes. Or just, you know, and I worked with, in my physical therapy career, worked with, you know, a lot of people in, you know, dementia units and stuff, and some of the things that they say, and you can correct them, which is really not, it's not really even the compassionate thing to do. Yeah. Or you can just say, oh, okay, I did not know that, yeah. and move on. Mm-hmm. So it de-escalates the situation and doesn't threaten, you know, the person. A lot of little nifty tricks. And that's the book that I'm working on right now, is a sequel to the Ninja book. And it's kind of like a how-to, but
evade, redirect.
Evade, deflect.
Deflect.
And redirect.
Redirect.
So imagine, even if this person did come at you and tried to punch you in the face and you got out of the way, so the punch didn't get you, but you could take your hand, like wax on, wax off, and just kind of deflect and then complete that circle, and you redirect all that energy. And that can actually even turn into a throw. But
throw or a flight or, yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay. A lot of different things, or even like a wrist lock. So you can injure them before you run away. You know, a lot of different choices.
So, in addition to you being anxious after the book release, and again, reviews can sometimes be horrible, right? So what do you say, or what have you said, to any of the haters out there who might be irked by the fact that you actually use your feminine wiles in training and, you know, for self-protection? Because that's, again, that's something that, you know, I'm a former military person. I went through West Point. There were times when if I saw a classmate being what I considered weak, I got a little bit angry because I felt that it reflected poorly on me and on all the women. So, you know, honestly, there were some times in here where I was thinking, ooh, yeah, should you do that? What, you know, how does that work? And is that the way we should be? But you know what? We are women, right? So how do you react to people who might have trouble with feminine wiles in a ninja society?
Yes. Oh, I'm so glad you brought that up, because it's really a little bit crazy, you know, and it's actually the men that I trained with that were actually, once they got used to me, because, you know, there was definitely a communication gap there when I first started training, because, you know, they never had a woman like me come walk into the dojo who would have to say, oh, excuse me, I have to go fix my lipstick, or, whoa, no, I'm having a hot flash, back off, you know, things like that. Most of the women that would come in were like, you know, oh yeah, let me teach me how to kick butt and take names. And that was definitely not me. So once we got to learn how to communicate with one another, and once they realized that, oh, this woman's kind of stay in here, she's starting to climb the ranks, then they started playing and teaching me how to use my feminine wiles and my feminine skills that I already had a significant, you know, toolbox. Yeah. And so they were just helping me dig into that toolbox and take it to another level. And every time I was able to, you know, like take one of the bigger guys down or achieve another higher rank, belt rank, you know, they were right there by my side. They were cheering me on. They were helping me, encouraging me, coaching me, except there were always a few guys who really did not like it and were obviously threatened by it. And some of them even had the audacity to say, oh, sensei's just giving you the belts because he likes you. And it's like, no, sensei is making me work harder for my belts than he has you work for those belts because he likes me. And he wants to make sure that I can take care of myself and keep myself safe. But I do have to mention that you said about the reviews. The very first review I got, and it was one of those editorial reviews, gave me 3 stars, which is like, okay, well, that's pretty crappy, but okay. And I knew, and this is terrible for me to say, I don't mean to be so judgmental, but the minute I started reading it, it was like, this is a guy. And then the further I got in the review, it's like, and he really does not appreciate empowered women. Because when he first said, you know, it was so beautifully written, and especially when the author was describing the pain that she was experiencing and, you know, and through the trauma and how wonderfully and descriptive and blah, blah, blah. Well, but then it all started falling apart on the chapter stop, drop, and roll. And I thought, that's really interesting, because when it got to stop, drop, and roll, that's when I was starting to step into my power. That's when I was starting to really feel that female energy, that warrior energy that is in each and every one of us, by the way. And of course, first thing I did, I sent off an email to Polly, my friend Polly, the, you know, consultant, publishing consultant, yeah. and my editor at the same time, you know, yeah. it's like, hey, check this out. And, you know, of course, the first thing that Polly does, let's look him up online, you know, find him. And the first thing the editor does is, oh, now let's just sit with this for a while and blah, 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 blah. And I said, I'm not upset because I could tell, you know, that this was, and then I got four more right after it. And they were all like outstanding. And one of them even said that the book reads like a martial, epic martial art movie. And that if, you know, it ever turns into a movie, she'd be the first one to buy a ticket and come see it.
Ah, nice. Well, it does. It kept me going because every time you were about to quit, and it happened a lot, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm done. You then get that spirit in you says, I'm not going to quit. I can't quit. And something I really loved in the book as well is your use of humor. I mean, you sprinkle humor beautifully throughout it. When the sensei tells you that you are light in the ass, talk about that one. That's so funny.
Oh my God. That was just so funny. Oh, okay. So just so the listeners know, I had thrown myself at the feet of the master, my teacher's teacher, you know, so he's my sensei squared, who's based out of Los Angeles. And that was like our home base for the dojo that I train in, still is, although now he's in Louisiana. So, and this guy's crusty. I mean, he was special ops in Vietnam, you know, and he's a tough nut. He really is. And I was having a real test of faith. And it's like, do I quit? Do I stay? Do I quit? Do I stay? And I was so, so ticked off at my sensei that it was like, I'm going, you know, going around him, and I'm just going to LA for 3 days by myself, throw myself at the feet of the master and have him train me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he was all for it. You bet. Yeah. And the whole time I'm on the plane going, this could be a really big mistake, you know, but we'd had some form of relationship. So the very first time, you know, I get there, I go, there's a grocery store within walking distance. So I get my groceries, I get all kind of, you know, healthy food and enough sustenance and hydration to last me, I hoped, for 3 days. And then I walk to the dojo, just easy walk, for the 6 o'clock class. Mm-hmm. And I walk in and it's like, where is everybody? And there were only two of his top students that were there working out. No, there was only one, Angel. He says, well, it's summer, that, you know, and nobody really shows up. Classes are really small. And I'm like, okay. So I change into my gi and I get on the mat and sensei shows up and we say our hellos, howdy do's and all that kind of stuff. And then class starts and I'm looking at Angel. And I said, well, oh no, there were two other guys came in and they were yellow belts. And I said, well, are we going to weigh in? And he said, oh no, no, no. And sensei went over and said, okay, you guys, you just practice. If you have any questions, you come and interrupt me.
And weigh in means for our listeners, what's a weigh in?
Oh, bow in to mm-hmm. pay your respects. Thank you. And so we did the bow in and he came over and he says, you have my complete, total, undivided attention.
Ooh.
And I thought, oh, geez,
oh no,
this is not what I signed up for. I wanted to be in a class.
Yeah.
So for an hour, it's probably a little bit more than an hour. It was just me, him, and Angel working on my techniques. I was pouring sweat. My legs were shaking. Then all of a sudden I could see the guys coming in for the next class, the 7 o'clock class. And I'm going, oh, phew, thank God. No.
Not done.
Not done. It was still nothing but me. And then, you know, he told them what to do, what to work on, interrupt him if they had any questions. Unfortunately, nobody had any questions that night, but they really enjoyed watching me and listening to sensei scream at me. So then by the third hour was starting, and I mean, I'm exhausted. And the guys start coming in, and these were all of his upper ranking students. These were his senior students, the black belts, the brown belts. And so they were coming in for instructor level class. So thank God. I had a time, you know, I had reinforcements. It wasn't just me by myself. So that the first time, you know, we're all lined up from highest ranking student to the lowest ranking student, and the lowest ranking student was sitting next to me. He was a brown belt. And so what was I? Was I a black belt at that time? Yeah, I was a black belt. I just wasn't Shoten yet. And so, you know, they get up, they'd work on their techniques, he'd correct them, and then it was my turn to get up, and I stood, and Angel was going to attack me, so Angel attacked me, and I started to move, and he just screamed at me, and he's screaming, no, 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 and his hands are on his head, it's like he was going to pull his hair out, but he didn't have any, and finally he said, Cheryl, you're just too damn light in the ass to get away with that, and I froze. And Angel, he had me in a bear hug, so his arms were around me really tight, and I could feel him shaking. He was laughing, and I looked. The guys were sitting in a line right in front of me, and you could tell they were trying not to look at me and trying not to laugh. And he's like, okay, and he comes over, and he pushes Angel away, and then he attacks me, and I'm thinking, he's going to kill me. He's really going to kill me. And so he held on to me as tight as he could.
From behind.
It was a bear hug from behind. And then he talked me through how to be able to move my weight and shift my weight to take him, you know, off balance, and then to be able to take him down. And then he had me do it with Angel. So when I got back down to my notebook and I wrote down on this date, I was told that I was too light in the ass. I have been called, you know, a dumbass, a hard ass, you know, all kind of like, you know, a jackass, but I have never been called a light ass. And I could not wait to go home to Denver and tell all of my ballet friends who are always so self-conscious about the size of their butt, you know, that I was actually called a light ass.
Too light in the ass.
I have the date and everything.
Maybe that's why we are able to cross-legged stand up.
Well, imagine if you had a little bit more packing back there, how would you be able to look that up?
Oh my goodness. Well, this took an interesting turn.
Sorry about that.
No, I mean, that was funny. It made me laugh. And then one of the incidents where you try to do a high thigh skin grab on a guy.
Oh, God.
You catch something else. Well,
yeah, that was priceless.
What I loved about that is that he, you know, probably after going, oh, was able to very professionally talk mm-hmm. you through it, the move, and what you really needed to do, what you really needed to grab. And but to do it in a way that showed that he wasn't embarrassed, because you obviously were a little bit embarrassed about that. But, you know, to be taught in a way where he appreciated the fact that you wanted to learn and you wanted to do it right. And I just thought that was beautiful.
Oh man, I was more than embarrassed. I was just horrified and just humiliated. I mean, I thought I was being really clever. You know, he had me in this grip and I was just going to tweak his inner thigh. And it was like, that doesn't feel right. And then of course the discussion afterwards, you know, and I'm screaming, oh my God, Aaron, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And he rolled away and he says, no, it's fine, really. But I think there's something you need to know. And then he gives me, and of course, you know, you were raised with all sisters too. He gives me this lengthy description about the parts and what to do if you ever are in that situation. It was like, how in the world do you guys walk around with those things? I just don't know.
Oh, beautiful. So you've had some very interesting and intense experiences with lots of different guys on different parts of the spectrum of their appreciation and or approval of you. And mm-hmm. again, I'm interested in leadership tactics and leadership skills. Why was your sensei, Mark, if that's his real name,
oh,
why was he such a
jackass?
Yeah. Yeah. So many times. And I would read those passages mm-hmm. where clearly, is this a good mm-hmm. leadership lesson here? Mm-hmm. Was he hazing mm-hmm. you mm-hmm. purposely mm-hmm. or was he, mm-hmm. not, I don't know. Those bothered me. Tell me what you learned about leadership.
That bothered me an awful lot, which is part of the do I stay, do I go, do I stay, do I go? And it's also, you know, the one thing that he probably believes that he's very good at, his leadership. I would disagree with that. And as you would too, and probably a lot of other people who read the book. But one of the reasons why I put up with a lot of it, and then of course I was starting to set boundaries as time was going on too, but he was and still is, in my opinion, an incredibly good teacher. But on the other side of that, he can be a real jerk. But like all of us, we can be real jerks. As far as leadership, I think I always had pretty good leadership skills. Even as a very young person, brand new out of college, when I moved, I had my bachelor's in respiratory therapy. That was my first career. Moved out to Denver, and I had only been living here for about a year when I was promoted to a managerial position. So I was the day shift supervisor at one of the local hospitals, which meant I, at the age of 22, where I was supervising people who had been in the field for years and who were in their 40s, sometimes even older. So learning how to manage people like that, and especially in high stress situations, like in the intensive care unit, the emergency room. So I think I was very good at that. And I think that gave me the skills to deal with those situations. On the other hand, at work, you're trying to save lives. You're working as a team. In the situation in the dojo, when he was behaving badly, he was somebody who had been, let's just say, Mark threw me a lifeline when everybody else was throwing me anchors. So some of the things that he did for me to help me along the way, I mean, I could not have gotten as far as I did without him, which absolutely made the times that he was cutting me off at the knees even more painful and hurtful.
How did he respond to this book?
With a lot of grace. He's still talking to me.
Okay.
Okay. So, the first day when I walked in and I saw the book on his desk, it was like, well,
here goes.
Here goes. And he said, he didn't say anything. He says, I want you to sign it for me. And I said, sure. He bought my first book years ago and I signed that one for him. So he was saying later, he said, well, one of my friends was stopped by to say hello. He says, and he picked up the book and started reading it. And, right at the, I started, off with a bang. And he read it for a while. And he said, he put it down and he looked at me and he said, are you okay with some of the things that she said?
Yeah.
And he said, it's her story. And he left it at that.
That's good.
And
that's
now, great. Some of some of the advertisement that he's getting and some of the attention that the dojo is getting from the book and from my appearances and stuff, I don't think he minds that much at all. So he was very, very gracious about it.
Good. Mm-hmm. All right.
And hey, there are times when he really is the good guy.
Oh yeah. Obviously. Cause you never quit.
Yeah. And there are times when, he'd walk over, like somebody would be, we're working on a technique or something, and he would just walk over and he would look and just watch for a while. And then he would say to my partner, he says, it's on page 85. Then, another day later, it's like, that's 102, so he's got a good, attitude about it, let's say.
He took notes. So circling back to being a chronic pain patient, yeah, which you no longer are, you no longer accept that. What would you say? And maybe I should start this question by saying, I am not a doctor. I cannot tell you what to do. Make sure you talk to your doctor before trying anything new or whatever. But what would you say to someone like, say, and again, I'm your age, and say someone has osteoporosis or, brittle bones, something like that. What would you say to them as far as, this type of training? Because, we're told, don't fall. You don't want to fall, right? And in martial arts, there's a lot of falling. There's a lot of being thrown and smacked to the ground. And maybe that's not for everyone. What would you say to people who are concerned, who want to do more, but are worried for maybe legitimate reasons?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Fantastic question. Thank you for bringing that up. I would say to start with something like Tai Chi. Tai Chi is the mother lode, I think, of health and vitality at every age, every stage of life. I tried a few classes. I didn't like it because, you know, as you probably already know from the book, I took a 3-year hiatus. And it was like, I was really missing that martial energy, And I took a Tai Chi class, which is right down near the Colorado Ballet. And after ballet one day, just walked across the street and took a class. And I didn't like it because I think I had too much pent up warrior energy that I wanted to, you know,
it was release. Too slow. It was too slow for you.
Well, and I could feel my spirit start to rise. You know, we talk about, you know, growing our spirit in the book. Yeah. And I could feel my ninja spirit start to rise. And I thought, well, crap, I can't be, you know, directing this to any of these people in class because they might, you know, inadvertently get hurt from it. So I was internalizing a lot of it. And the next day I woke up and I was as sick as a dog because all of that energy I was taking back in instead of letting it out.
Interesting.
But, yeah, so that was my experience only because I think of all the years of martial arts training I had. But I would definitely start with something like Tai Chi. If you do have osteoporosis, you know, there's a lot of things you can do to reverse it. And it is reversible. I had talked to a gentleman, I can't remember his name right now. He was on my show. He was a physician who left his, he was a orthopedic surgeon who left his very lucrative large practice to do alternative medicine, functional medicine, because he was like, why am I trying to repair these fractures after they happen? Instead of why aren't we trying to teach people how not to have fractures? So I would look into something like that. Again, I'm not a doctor either, but there's a lot of alternative things that you can do and still stay safe. And one of the things that is really, really beneficial, just like we talked about all those years ago, getting down on the floor and back up again is really so important for your joint health, your bone health. And it takes away that fear of falling too. And I will tell you this, it was last New Year's Eve day, last year, not this past one. And I was at the dojo, he was having class. And when I walked out after class, a thin sheet of ice formed on the decorative cement in front of the dojo. So I had my arms full of my stuff and I took two steps. And one minute I was stepping on the ground. The next minute I was flying through the air. The next minute I was like, what the heck happened? It was when I described it to some people, they laughed and said, it sounds like a cartoon. Well, and you can laugh because I wasn't hurt at all. But as soon as I hit the ground, it was like, oh my God, what happened? And the guys saw it and they came running out and they're like, oh my God, are you hurt? Are you hurt? And the first thing I did was I looked up at them and I said, did you see my break fall? Because it had to have been spectacular. And, you know, I had practiced for 20 years falling on a mat. And let me tell you something, falling on cement is a lot different than falling on the mat. And I looked and my stuff was scattered all around me. I had one of my wooden swords, you know, was over here. My katana was over there. My notebook was over there. And I either threw it so hard or landed so hard that papers flew out of my notebook. My water bottle, my keys, it was, and they're scattered all around me. And it was really funny. And they helped me up and everything like that. And I said, no, I'm really fine. And it wasn't until I started driving home, I was getting like that trauma response. So I was starting to shake and it was thinking, oh my God, what could have happened? And it was shut up, calm yourself down, take some deep breaths. I got home and then I thought maybe I should take some Advil just prophylactically. Cause you know, I did hit hard and you know how old we are. And I thought, no, let's just wait until the morning and see how you feel. And I woke up feeling great. No injury, no bruises, no nothing.
So the muscle memory of your fall, falling and falling and learning how to fall appropriately.
Yeah. And really, I just really wish a lot of, and maybe they do, maybe senior centers do, you know, have, because you want to do it in a safe situation. And, you know, you can go to a martial arts studio as long as it is geared to people, I would say, over 50. Yeah. And how to fall softly and gently and well padding. So, you know, I really believe that everybody should learn how to fall and, you know, get crawl. Yeah. Just get down on the floor. Don't fall. Get down on the floor, crawl around, look under the bed, look under the couch, you know, play with the dogs, but you got to do it.
All right. Before my last question, I'm going to read something to you from your book.
Oh, okay.
I went to ballet class to lose myself in the music, the movement, the familiar patterns, the feminine camaraderie of my girlfriends, and the gracious presence of the men in class who did not feel the need to behave like cavemen. So here's my last question to you.
Yes.
If you had to give up one of them, ballet or martial arts, mm-hmm. which would you give up?
This is the same question that my precious, adorable, now 6'7" nephew asked me when he was, I think, 7 or 8 years old. He was 7 years old.
Really?
Yes. He was in the back seat. I was driving. We'd come from the park. He asked me that question, and I looked in the rearview mirror, and I says, well, Dylan, you know, I love ballet with all my heart and my soul, you know, and I'm going on about how long I've done it and how much I love it and what it means to me. And you could just see his little forehead starting to do this and, like, you know, maybe wishing he hadn't asked the question. And finally, I says, but if I really had to decide, if I had to make a choice, I would give up ballet and do nothing but martial arts.
Why?
And this... Well, his response, I'm driving, and he says, that's my girl.
Oh, how sweet. That is so sweet.
I almost drove off the road. It was just so precious.
That's my girl. But why? But why? Tell me why.
I love ballet. I still do ballet. As a matter of fact, I took class on Saturday morning, and like an idiot, I went back for another class on Sunday morning. And Sunday evening, you know, we had a special instructor advanced training at the dojo at 4 o'clock, and I went there. Ballet fills my heart with joy. I love the music, the camaraderie, the familiarity of moving through difficult patterns that really are difficult, that most people really can't do, especially at, you know, as we get to be mature. Mm-hmm. But I think that martial arts fills my spirit. It gives joy to my spirit. And that inner warrior that's always there, that's always listening and paying attention. And I think that that voice is always saying, you go, girl.
And martial arts is also a dance.
It's definitely a dance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I could spend the whole day with you, Cheryl. I love you. In addition to this book, the other book that you have behind you there, Forever Fit and Flexible, you know, but Beyond 50 has done quite well as well. You have a podcast called the Femininja podcast. What a great way to play on the ninja.
Thank you.
And again, you've been interviewed all over the place. People can find out so much more about you by just typing in Cheryl I Love and looking at videos, and there are tons of them. And each one will give us different information about you and your fabulous and unique life. You have a very unique life, and you're going to be doing this forever, right? You're married, yes?
Oh, yeah. I've been married for... Let me see. 1986 was when we got married. So I think it's coming on 37, 38 years, but yeah. We've been together for 44, I think 45, something like that.
Yeah. And obviously he thinks it's okay that you're doing this, right? Do you scare him?
Oh my goodness. Yes, it scares the hell out of him. You know, at first he thought it was really cute. You know, I mean, obviously I was doing it because, you know, to gain my power and, you know, take my power back. And he was very supportive of that. And, you know, when I was learning these little wrist techniques, when somebody grabs your wrist, how to get out of them, I'd say, Mike, grab my wrist. And he said, okay. And so, you know, oh, hey, you know, that's really good. And then a couple of weeks later, it's like, try this. I want to try this on you. And he'd say, okay. And he'd say, oh, ow, that hurt. And then a few weeks later, he goes, no, you go practice with them, the guys at the dojo. But, you know, the amazing thing is, and this is my husband, he's never like threatened by it. He says, you know, when the guys started calling me, you know, to, hey, you want to meet and do some extra training, blah, 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 blah. I'd be calling them and, you know, I'd hang up the phone. I said, that was one of my boyfriends. He'd say, which one? And, you know, and I mean, he was so cool with it. And even when I said, you know, Mike, I want to go to LA to train with the guys. And he's like, fine, when are you leaving? I'll take it to the airport. You know, so you have to be a very secure person, I think.
Yes, yes, to be married to a strong woman. Maybe one of your books needs to be The Reluctant Ninja's Husband.
Husband. The husband of the reluctant ninja. And, you know, and you've in my book, he never saw me. He and my dad came once when I was a yellow belt, you know, and they stayed for about 5 minutes because my dad was a black belt in karate. And then they left to go play golf and do manly bonding. Yeah, bonding. That's
bonding.
Bonding. Yes, I don't know. So anyhow, he never really saw me in action until it was my test for my second degree brown belt. And he came and watched. And he was stunned. He was shocked.
Yeah. I think that's awesome. And congratulations to your husband for living with you. And yes, yeah, I appreciate that. I have a very strong husband as well. And he is always encouraging to whatever I want to do. And I do some crazy things as well. Yes.
Yes, you do.
Cheryl, where can our audience find your work?
You can go to my website, CherylILove.com, and just remember there's no E on the end of I love. Everybody puts one there just out of habit. I even do it myself sometimes. So, you know, you can find my books there on Amazon. You can find me on social media, typically LinkedIn. I'm on Facebook, Instagram. You know, if you have any questions, especially those of you ladies out there who are listening and thinking, you know, I kind of might want a little bit of this ninja energy. If you're looking for a dojo or you want to try a martial arts school or whatever, contact me and I'll take you through what not to do and how to pick a school or a dojo that is going to be user-friendly for you. So just so you know, I'm here to cheer you on. I'm here to encourage every woman out there, you know, find that warrior spirit. You got it in you. You know you have it. And just to be able to cultivate it and use it for the power of good.
What a fabulous message. Cheryl Ilove, author of The Reluctant Ninja and Forever Fit and Flexible. And your next book is what? What are you working on?
Oh, God. Well, the next book, it's a work in progress and it's going up and down. The title is Secrets of a Warrior Queen.
Okay.
Where I can share some of the secrets, the philosophies, the mindset of the art that I studied and a couple of other movement arts. So you do not have to spend 20 years in a smelly dojo with a bunch of sweaty men like I did. Worked out for me. I know a lot of women might not want to do that, but I really want them to have the tools to be able to start releasing that warrior spirit.
Sounds like a class. Sounds like a course. Sounds like you're going to open your own studio.
Well, I already have a title for that. As you know, that was in the book too.
Okay. All right. Cheryl Ilove, thank you for spending this time with us and our listeners. And let's get together before the next Christmas, Georgetown Christmas Market, okay?
Yes, absolutely, Laurel. And I want you on my show.
We'll figure that out.
We will,
Cheryl,
figure that out.
Have a great rest of the month and we'll talk to you soon. Thank you again.
Thank you.
Bye.
Alligator Preserves is hosted and produced by Laurel McCard, with technical support provided by her husband, Mike McCard. Follow her on her website at leadvillelaurel.com, where she writes about life, real and imagined. If you enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy her books. Find her work at amazon.com.